Hello and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retal.
Okay, the convention we're going to be talking about in this episode is Comic-Con International San Diego 2008. It is over and we have survived. At least I think we did. How about you, Bob?
I was very tired at the end of every single day and I didn't make it till the end of the day on Sunday, but I am alive, so that's a good thing.
My feet were killing me the entire time.
Al Sparrow had a suggestion about some kind of shoes that he had gotten. I think he said they were Reebok Hexalites. And he's a big guy, kind of like us. And he said that his feet were loving him throughout the entire show, walking on these things. So I'm going to need to try out these shoes.
Yeah. Because I go with the ones that have the gel things in the shoe. I make sure I've got, thick padded socks. I do what I can on that. But just the harsh concrete floor there at times in the convention center.
It's just got like that very thin industrial carpeting on top of the concrete.
Well, not even all of it had that.
Well, that's true. And the places that do have any kind of carpeting at all, it's not like any kind of substantial. That's like standard convention center.
Yeah, yeah. But this is the only standard convention center I usually go traipsing around through.
That's true.
So, it was fun. I think my trip lasted a little bit longer than yours just because I had a bit further to commute.
That's true. You've got the pre-con and the post-con experience.
Yeah. Well, and once again, thanks for putting me up for a couple of nights. Staying with you is always fun. I got, how many photos did we take? Geez, about 500 or something of your room almost?
Yeah, I think you said.
Geez, I've still got to go through those, get those posted. That may take a week or two. But rest assured, people, the updated photos of Bob's Comic Museum is coming. And that was up to date for all of, 15 minutes?
Well, they were out of date by the end of the day, certainly.
Yeah. One mail shipment and suddenly, you've got a couple of new busts and statues and whatnot, which is cool, but wow. I don't know how you keep track of all that. So let's see, we did that. We did the two live episodes at your place. That was, of course, fun to actually, be sitting in the same room as somebody I'm podcasting with. That's only the second time I think I've had that experience. The first time was actually on somebody else's podcast here in town, The Struggling Entrepreneur, which is where I found out about the Zoom H2 that we used to record those two episodes. So
yeah, and while I had heard some feedback from people that the sound quality wasn't quite as good as when we do it over Skype with the headsets and stuff, I mean it was kind of fun to do it live with the mic there in between us. So you kind of give some, you get some,
Well, it's just different acoustics because you've got more the ambient sound and stuff than we usually do. Because again, we're using the headsets right now. But I think that worked out surprisingly well, so I was happy with that. Now, I don't know about you, but I did a little bit of shopping before I even hit the convention center, both when you took me to Comic Toons and Toys, which, again, excellent store. Picked up a couple of things there. What did I pick up? Picked up the Middleman 1 through 4, Volume 1 and Volume 2 of that. Also picked up the Big Bang Presents number 6, which is kind of a retro style series that's been going on for a number of years, and this was their Agent of Badge storyline, which is kind of their riff on the Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, so I figured that'd be fun. And then after I left you to go down to San Diego, I swung by two stores in San Diego, did a little shopping there. At one of them I picked up actually didn't pick up that much. I think I stumbled across a book that looked interesting, Manga Studio for Dummies. And I heard about that software. I now have that software. Remind me to tell you what I did Friday morning when we get to that point. That was about the only thing I bought there. But then I went to Southern California Comics. That's the name of the store, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that's in the kind of warehouse, like way back where you'd never find it unless you were purposely looking for it, and maybe not even then.
Well, talk about never find it. I worked, because that store's been open since 95. I don't know how long it's been in that location, but I think it's been there the entire time. I worked maybe 2 miles away from there, and everybody I worked with knew I was into comics and stuff. Nobody in that area had told me about the store. I never found it and stuff, which is really disappointing because I drove by there figuring, hey, it's the day before con, it'll be closed. Sure enough, it was open. Place blew me away. It was one of the most impressive comic stores I've ever been in. It had an excellent selection of back issues, a very impressive selection of new stuff, tons of the busts, the statues, those sort of things. It seemed very professionally run and organized. They had a sign up of, hey, here are all the variant covers for the week. Here's what's coming out next week. They seemed to have a decent pull and hold customer base from what I was seeing by the size of the file cabinets. It just looked like a really good store. Parking was abysmal. It's hard to find. But if you're in the San Diego area and you're interested in that store, do a web search for it. If you still can't find it, let us know and we'll help you get to it. It's worth
basically you turn off the main street, Claremont Mesa Boulevard, into what looks like a kind of complex of warehouses, and you go almost all the way back, you know, and it's in one of these warehouses, and you know, there's no big sign or anything. You kind of a little storefront on it, just says Southern California Comics, but they've got a pretty decent amount of space in there, and I've certainly picked up some cool stuff there. They've got a lot of dollar comics, a really good selection of dollar comics. And I've also picked up for not that much some old spirit pages, you know, from the Sunday papers that are kind of neat. They've got a box full of those, you know, like maybe $4 or $5 a piece, which very reasonable for,
yeah,
you know, something back from the 40s.
It's, again, a little bit of a trek to get to in terms of you've got to go like a mile and a half almost back off the road in this warehouse area. If you, once you know where it is, it's easy to find, but finding it the first time, not terribly simplistic, but definitely worth the trouble of doing so. I thought this was, again, one of the most impressive stores I've been in. So, in terms of both size, selection, and professionality. So, at some point, we may see if we can do a retailer spotlight with them, because it's definitely a store I want to spotlight and let people be aware of. So, I didn't buy a whole lot there, actually. I was a little pressed on time, trying to get to the hotel, check in before that got insane. And we were trying to hook up with a couple of people to do the Star Trek experience at the Aerospace Center that afternoon. So about the only thing I wound up buying there was the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I was going to get the trade paperback, but the manager there, she told me that they still had the two issues. And I'm like, well, geez, yeah, I'd rather get the periodical format. I don't want to say monthly because I think they came out almost on back-to-back weeks.
I believe they all came out on the same day.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, along with the trade paperback. I think they all just got blasted out to the stores all at once.
That's crazy. So I picked up the two issues. They were about $6 each, so it was about a wash as to, you know, was the trade cheaper or not. So, but the funny thing is I'll probably get to reading it sooner in this format than in trade, but that's just me. I'm weird that way. So that was most of the shopping I did before getting to the convention. And then, like I said, I did the Star Trek thing at the Aerospace Center with a couple of friends. That was fun.
Yeah, San Diego, there are a tremendous number of other things that you can do while you're in town. Of course, you know, when I'm down there for Comic-Con, I mostly want to do Comic-Con stuff, and then I can go down there anytime, right? I'm like an hour and a half away. But certainly for people who are ever coming out to visit for the con, I would suggest, you know, coming out, you know, the weekend before. And that way, you know, you can, you know, fly in on Saturday or whatnot, have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and most of the day on Wednesday to just do things that are tremendously fun to do in San Diego. There's beaches and zoos and museums and just all kinds of things. So it's a great town to visit.
Yeah. And there's something to be said for kind of being situated in your hotel before the mad rush begins.
Right. So Wednesday, registration. I got there about – well, the show opened at 6, and I got there around 3. I was resigned to the fact that parking under the convention center would not be available that first day. So I went to the – and ironically, the farther away from the convention center you get, the more parking costs. So
really?
Underneath the convention center, it's $8, mm-hmm. right? Then that structure that's right across from it near where the new Hilton is,
uh-huh.
you know, on Harbor, it's $10 there. But then if you move across Harbor into like the downtown area, because I was actually looking around there also, it's like $15 or $20 for parking. So the farther away you get, the more you're going to pay. Very ironic, you know, which is also, you know, speaks towards, you know, get there early, although, you know, don't get there earlier than me because I want parking.
So. Yeah. Once Bob's parked, then you can come down. That's all there is to it.
It's an open season once I've got my parking space for all you other guys. But, you know, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I got there at 3. I heard that it was a little more challenging closer to 6, but I just walked right up. There were tons of, you know, they weren't selling any on-site registrations this year because they totally sold out the show beforehand. So I, you know, with my two sons, we walked right up, got our badges. It wasn't any kind of an issue whatsoever. Went and sat in line. Now, this year, there were some just really ridiculous line Nazis going around. They had it in their mind somehow that, and I talked to several supervisors, that you could not sit down when you were in line because the line might need to move and it would be a fire hazard if you're sitting while you're in line. And, you know, so you're up against a wall, you know, in a hallway and you're, you know, it's line, right? And you want to sit down because you're going to be there for a couple hours. And these security guards tell you, stand up, you can't sit in line. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know when you're going to move the line. You know you're not going to move the line for 2 hours. And look, right over there on the other side of the hallway, those people are sitting. Oh, well, they're not in line. I was just told that you can't sit if you're in line. You know?
Yeah.
Security guard mentality. They do what they are told to do, which I guess is good on one respect, but not good if you're the poor fool trying to take a load off your feet in line, you know.
Well, I think a lot of the people who go to Comic-Con are people like us that have, you know, day jobs sitting at a desk most of the day. And, I mean, I'm not used to being on my feet all day. Now, maybe there are other professions where, you know, you're used to that, that's not a big deal or whatever. But there comes a point where, man, I just got to sit down, you know.
What I did on Wednesday night was I left Steven and Greg in line. And I went and wandered off and I found a bench somewhere and I sat down and was reading for an hour and a half. And then I came back and got back in line with them, you know, about 20 minutes before they let us in.
Yeah. Now, for me, registration took a couple of steps. I had to get through the press line. That didn't open until – I'm trying to think. We must have gotten over there 2:30, 2 o'clock. Press line didn't open until 3. Pro registration got in at 2:30. My sister took care of that, and it was funny because I'm sitting there. It's like, well, form a line here for press. It's like, okay, I'm like the number two guy in the line or something. It's like, this line's not going to move for an hour. We're outside the convention center. Got to stand, whatever. Not a big deal at that point. But, you know, I'm sitting there. My sister ducks off to go get in the line. I blink, poof, she's like gone or whatever. Bump into Steve Bryant and the guy he was sharing a booth with this year with Law Dog Productions, Jim Heffron, I believe. Forgive me, Jim, if I got the name wrong. But talk to them real quick. They get in the pro line. Next thing I know, poof, they're gone too. I mean, that line was just moving. Then my sister came out with all the bags of the programs and the event guide and all that stuff for those badges. Because we were picking up for a few other people, too. And I took those, trekked back to the hotel while she stood in the press line. by the time I got back to the convention center, and again, this was just across the street and back, so it's only about a 10-15 minute thing. She'd sailed through that line. We had all of our badge stuff taken care of, and we were doing good. So I think that was around the time, I guess you called me while I was heading back to the hotel for the first round of dropping off heavy stuff. And then we hooked up upstairs to give you your press badge and stuff.
Right, up under the sails.
I would say all in all, they did an excellent job on registration and moving the lines along. Things went fast and well. They have had years in the past, although it's been quite a few, where things were a little bumpy in places. This year, again, smooth sailing. So kudos to them on that.
Yeah, I thought that that whole thing, especially without having to worry about people filling out forms wrong, pulling out methods of payment, processing payments, and all these kind of things, it just went a lot faster because people just had their thing. It had a barcode on it. Boom. Here you are in the database. Here's your badge. Move along.
Yeah.
You know, go get your sack of, you know, catalogs and stuff and be gone. And it moved really fast because of that. And again, you know, like right around when the show was opening and maybe a lot of people all showed up at the same time, it moved a little slower. But compared to previous years, it was very fast.
Yeah. No, I was going to say the other thing that moved pretty fast was preview night. That thing just shot by. It's only 3 hours, but I mean, 3 hours is a decent amount of time. It was one of those things I'm turning around and it felt like it was over.
Yeah, I used that as an opportunity to try to pick up most of my exclusive quote unquote items. And I was a little interested in how some of that worked. So, you know, Diamond Select had some various items, and I went to Big Bad Toy Shop, you know, so two of the things that I was getting, and I was picking up a couple of things for other people as well, but there was a Mighty Mug Peter Parker, and there was a Mini Mate set with the invaders from World War II. Mm-hmm. Those were two of the things that I was looking to pick up. And so I go to the toy area, and I'm looking all around, and I went to Big Bad Toy Shop, and I said, "Do you have the Peter Parker?" And they're like, "Oh, you know, we sold them all online before we even came to the show."
What?
You know? And it's like, yeah, they, you know, well, I mean, you know, they're one of these companies that basically just price gouges for, you know, these kind of things online and stuff. So they, I guess they knew that they were going to get X number of these show exclusives. So they just sold them all on their website, and they didn't have any to even, I mean, this is like literally 5 minutes after the show opened. You know, and they didn't have any. I don't think they even had any to sell at the show.
Wow.
So I went over, I went to the Diamond because nobody had them in the toy pavilion. And I think it's like a similar thing. All these toy shops, they have the online store and they can make more money by, you know, just jacking the price up and selling them online to people that aren't at the show. So it kind of makes a, you know, strange thing to the show exclusive. But I went over to the Diamond Select booth and they gave me a little flyer that had, you know, all the different places that should have the Diamond Select thing. So I went over into the comic dealer area and I found them over there at – There were at a variety of places. Most of the places they were limiting you could only buy one. So I had to go to a couple different ones because I was buying one for me and I was buying one for some other people. And then the other problem over there is that they are all charging sales tax because the state of California is really cracks down on some of these dealers. So, you know, whereas an artist may just, you know, sell something and take cash and stuff, the people who are like actual stores, I think there's some scrutiny on them, and most of them were charging sales tax. So I ended up having to pay the tax on them. But I did get them, which is a good thing because by Saturday and Sunday, I mean, the Peter Parker was supposed to be $20, right? $19.99. I saw it selling for $25 and $30 by Sunday.
Yeah.
From those same dealers. So the price was going up on it as the show went by. And, you know, picking up some of the other things, I picked up my Sideshow show exclusive, the Iron Man Mark II helmet. that one I had pre-ordered and it sold out, you know. So that one you just have to stand in line and pick it up, you know. You've already paid for it beforehand. That was pretty much it. I got some sketchbooks. I got, you know, some other things. But that's, you know, Wednesday night is mostly, you know, what kind of freebie is a publisher giving away and what kind of, like, exclusive kind of things do you want to try to pick up before they're gone. And the other thing I find about exclusives is kind of a crapshoot, because some of them, and you never know, some of them will totally sell out. And other times they're just, there's tons of them left over. In fact, I had a little bit of a trial trying to get my Hasbro exclusives. They were doing that in a bizarre fashion. You know, fast forward to Thursday morning, you go to the Hasbro booth. And again, I got up early. I stood in line and I was one of the first people on the show floor, went right over to Hasbro. They let us in at 9:30 which again, I'll compliment them this year. They let in on time or a little bit early every single day, whereas in past years, they almost always let in late on the first couple of days.
Yeah, they had no issues with that.
It was always 10 o'clock. You know, it was always used to be 10 o'clock, and it would be 10:15 or 10:20 when they let you in. Here, 9:30, they push back the opening time, and boom, 9:30, spot on, they're letting people in. Well, so I went straight to Hasbro. And they say, oh, well, you need a ticket for line management, and we're giving out the tickets up under the sales. And, oh, by the way, we started giving them out at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, thanks.
Well, the one thing I will say about opening the floor early and stuff is not only did they do that, they made sure people knew about it this year. Because in some years, they would say the floor opened at 10, but they'd actually open it at 9:45 or 9:30. And that caught a lot of vendors and dealers unaware. You know, they'd be coming in.
You don't want to be setting your booth up when people start flowing in.
Yeah. Well, and particularly on subsequent days when all you've got to do is kind of, you know, pull back the cover you've put over your table or whatever and be behind the booth. But if you're there, you know, 15 minutes after the masses have invaded the floor, you know, that's a lousy way to start the day.
They did let us in late on preview night. It was about a quarter after six or something.
Was it? Okay.
By the time they let us in.
Now, I spent preview night just going to a couple of booths for people I wanted to be sure to say hi to and make sure I knew where their booths were. Now, by this point, matter of fact, it might have even been, I guess it was that day, Wednesday, yeah. I had already met Jan Lucanis from Creative Impulse that does Justice for Hire. He was staying at the Gaslamp Hilton and stuff, and I had gone downstairs to ask something at the front desk or whatever and bumped into him on the elevator and stuff, talked with him.
Recognize him from the DVD?
No, but I should have, you know.
Did he have like a big Justice for Hire sign on him or something? I was wondering how you recognized him, because he's in those fighting videos, you know. He's Ebony.
Yeah. It was one of those things. I'm coming down the elevator. He gets on, and he's got a con badge but flipped around, so he's already gotten his exhibitor thing. So it was clear he was there for con, and he had kind of that look about him that I think first-time attendees and exhibitors have of, wow, this is really exciting, I'm here for con, and not yet the, oh, my God, I know what con is kind of look. So, you know, I asked, you know, hey, you here for the show? Because, of course, I knew he was. And he's like, yeah, I'm an exhibitor and stuff. And we get to talking, and it's like, so, you know, he's like, swing by my booth. It's like, which booth is it? And it's like, you know, so, you know, booth six whatever for Creative Impulse. It's like, I've read some of your stuff. I've read Justice for Hire and stuff, and we talk some more. He was a really cool guy, really upbeat, energetic. I saw him a couple of times later in the weekend, both at the hotel and at his booth. And he just seems like somebody to me who's really going to go places in this. He's got, I think, a good creative vision. He's got some good ideas. He's got, I think, the drive to make it happen, and seemed like a really good salesman at his booth. Not one of those hype guys, but just kind of a, you know, let me tell you what I'm doing. And he was really jazzed about what he's doing, and it's contagious.
Yeah, and they had that little preview book for what's coming out next, Durga the Geomancer.
Yeah.
It looked actually pretty decent. The art in it is very nice.
I picked up that. I also went ahead and picked up the first issues of Bardo and Phaix Preta. I'm probably mispronouncing that. And those looked really interesting too. So they've got quite a bit coming out, and it was just cool talking with him. He was a really nice guy. So that did that. Who else did I talk to during preview night? I talked to Steve Bryant and Jim Heffron over at the Law Dog booth. I talked to, of course, Lynn, Dave, and Micah over at Bushy Tales. Talked to Dave Dwanch over at his booth. I made it over to Dial R at some point. I don't remember if I did that preview night or later in the weekend. Picked up a few things from them. Also hit Lowbrow Productions, I think, on preview night. And that's when I picked up the first 5 issues of Toopy Doops, because I'd gotten the trade. Picked up the early years trade and got a free sketch from him. So he was fun to talk to, interesting to meet, and I really want to see more of Toopy Doops. I think he's got a great property there.
Yeah, I talked to him on Thursday or Friday and got the early years trade, and he did a little sketch in it for me. And he's going to start, I think he's going to do issue 7 and finish this off, but then he's going to go to just doing trades. He's going to stop doing the individual issues.
Yeah, I think he said something about maybe doing some of it online and stuff.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Which is kind of the girl genius model. That's what Phil Folio, who I also talked to at the show, has gone to with Girl Genius. He used to do comics on that, but now he puts the pages out online, and then he collects them every 6 months or so into a nice, he does hardcovers and softcover trades, and that's what I buy.
There are a couple others that have moved to that kind of a production model. I think Finder at, I'm thinking Lightspeed Press or something like that is doing it, and a few others. It's, hey, if it works for them, I think that's great. It keeps the stuff coming out, and I got no problem with that. So like I said, I spent most of preview night just talking to some friends and doing a couple of shopping for a few things that I knew I wanted to get. So it just shot by really quick.
And by the time it was over, I mean, it was insane getting out of the, you just had to walk across the street. I had to get my car out of that parking structure. They booted us out of the hall at 9. I was not out of the parking structure until 9:45.
Wow.
It was like, I mean, you can imagine. I mean, that parking structure's got to hold, I don't know, several thousand cars at least. Mm-hmm. And everyone was all leaving at the same time. So it was really challenging. And then on the way back to the hotel, we stopped in Old Town and ate at the Old Town Mexican Cafe, which I really like. That place is like 10 o'clock at night. We're in the place and it was still pretty crowded at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But, we got back to the room around 11 or so, went to bed, and then back up for Thursday, like dragging my 4 kids out of bed at 6 a.m. Well, we got to go and get our parking.
In previous years, I would do dinner after preview night with the guys I went to the Star Trek thing with. Jeff and Phil Moy, they used to do art on Legionnaires. Phil just did the Myth Conceptions issue that was out. I mean, they've been around for a while. We've known them for, my sister and I, for years. But we'd usually do it after preview night. And it's just gotten to the point where by the time you get out of the convention center a little after 9, get into the gas lamp quarter, find a place to eat and stuff, it just makes for a late night. And I'm too old for that these days. I need my sleep. I find the convention tiring enough as it is. So, but it's one of those things I keep wondering when they're going to kind of, start creeping preview night a little earlier and earlier to make that almost into a full day.
But it would be nice if you're going to do it, instead of 6 to 9, if it was like, 4 to 7 or something,
Yeah.
And just have it end at a reasonable time so people can, be on about their business. But I think a lot of it has to do with when can the dealers get there and how long does it take them to set up and be ready, for the show.
Yeah.
So that's what's driving a lot of it. because these guys have to get there and, you know, they are only going to be able to start setting up on Wednesday, I would imagine. And, you know,
actually, they start at least on Tuesday, possibly Monday. Now, for some booths, it's not a big deal. For other booths where they've got these, you know, double-decker things, it takes a while for them to set up.
I'm thinking more of like the stores, like the big professional ones that, you know, have people who know what they're doing. You know, I'm thinking some of these, you know, shops like roll into town and, you know, they're setting up starting on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So Thursday, I spent a lot of time going around, you know, again, after my encounter with Hasbro early on, I talked to a lot of different publishers, and it's over the course of the, I don't remember what publishers I talked to on what days, but I hit, you know, most of them. I mean, I went to the DC and Marvel booths, of course, but I mean, they don't care whether we live or die. I mean, like, you know, it's kind of,
I don't know entirely about that. I went over to the DC booth at one point, actually a few different points, but at this particular point, I saw Bob Wayne just kind of sitting there, you know, doing nothing. I figured, oh, I'll go over, say hi, introduce myself, whatever. And I kind of get the reaction of, yeah, I know who you are, kind of a thing. It's like I'm thinking, you know, I'm trying not to slam DC on anything on the numbers and stuff or whatnot. But, you know, the numbers are what they are. So,
yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny.
I every time I was in the DC booth, it was like totally crowded with people. And,
yeah.
You know, they're just churning people through. I didn't have any real conversation. I did talk to somebody at the DC Direct, and it was like, I was curious on the, you know, why they solicit the Mary Marvel bust as Shazam Mary. And they said, oh, yeah, well, we can't use Marvel, the word Marvel, in any promotional material. Like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that, which is why, of course, they have to call Captain Marvel Shazam, right, on the cover. They can't.
Yeah, yeah, I knew.
Market anything with Marvel in the title of it.
I thought it was just Captain Marvel. I didn't realize it went to even
the
Mary
word
Marvel.
They can't use.
And, well, it makes sense not to use it just on principle. You know, you don't.
You know, and again, you look at that Captain Marvel 12-inch figure that I got. I have a picture of it on the forum thread for the San Diego Con, and it says Shazam. It doesn't say Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
they can't say Captain Marvel.
Well, you know, it's funny because I usually talk to a couple of people at DC every year. Usually Mike Carlin, usually Vince, one of their sales guys, who this year was just running around. I mean, he's always running the booth and stuff. But this year, I think it was just enough bigger with just enough other people there and stuff that kept him fairly busy. I never even saw Mike Carlin. I'm sure he was there.
I had dinner on Saturday night? Yeah, you were out with your buddies. I had dinner over at the Marriott again on Saturday night with Steven, and Mike Carlin was sitting at the table next to me with a bunch of people. I mean, I didn't infringe on them. They were having, you know, it was a bunch of DC people and they were talking business and stuff, but they were sitting at the table next to me.
I've had lunch with him in years past at the con. He is a really nice guy. I think kind of an underutilized talent at DC right now, because, I mean, he's just you look at back at how he managed the Superman titles and made it essentially a weekly series almost there for a couple of years way back when. You know, he's got the ability to assemble good creative teams. He's got the ability to keep things running on time. He was the one they pulled in to kind of keep the second half of Countdown, you know, kind of salvage that, if you will. He's always fun to talk to, and I miss, not having had that chance this year. I always look forward to talking with him and just kind of, you know, seeing what he thinks of the convention in general.
I heard you mended fences with Brian Wood.
Actually, I don't even know that it was so much a mending fences as just to going over and saying hi. You know, I certainly didn't have hard feelings with him. You know, I think there are a few times his wording could have been a little better. And, you know, it was nothing personal from his side. I went over to his booth at one point. I was a little hesitant to do that because I had no idea what kind of reaction I was going to get. For all I knew, he'd pull out a broadsword and slice me in two or something. But really nice guy. And I was really impressed not only by, you know, how nice he was, but how well he managed his booth. He was always kind of standing, you know, talking with the people or sketching something or telling people about one of his books, not in a Carnival Barker kind of a manner, but not in a meek, mild, hiding behind his table manner either. He had a nice, even keel, kind of soft sell that I found, you know, very inviting and stuff. I wound up getting a copy of Demo, which he did through Vertigo.
Oh.
Got him to autograph that trade.
I think Demo... Did Demo come out from... I think Demo came out from Oni.
I think the trade came out...
The trade might have come out through Vertigo. I think Demo originally came out through one of the smaller publishers.
It may have, but... Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's putting out his trades through Vertigo now. I mean, he's pretty well in with those guys.
Well, he's one of the two, I would say right now, heavy hitters for Vertigo. I would say him and Bill Willingham. So, you know, I enjoyed my discussion with Brian Wood. Thought he was, I mean, he was, you know, kind of, you know, clarifying his position and stuff. And I think really what it comes down to is... He's got nothing against the numbers being reported. He just wishes it was either kind of an, I don't want to say an all or nothing situation. But he's, you know, the impression I get is frustrated that since not all of his sales are being reported, it makes it look like his books aren't doing as well as they really are. And I think that's a very fair assessment because I'm not looking at the numbers for everything. I'm looking at the numbers for what's going through Diamond. And, I mean, the case in point, the Demo trade paperback I got from him, you know, he sold that to me directly. That's not a sale that's ever going to show up on the Diamond charts and therefore not going to be in the numbers we discuss, you know, and he seemed to be moving a decent amount of stuff while I was there. Just not, you know, oodles and oodles at any one time, but, you know, just a constant flow of product. And that adds up over time.
Right.
So... I was glad to talk with him. At some point, we may have him on just to kind of discuss, you know, sales trends and stuff from kind of his perspective on the creator side, because I think he's definitely got some valid and interesting viewpoints on that. So that I counted that as, I don't want to say success, but something I'm very glad I was able to do face to face.
I just can't, because I went to his booth. I got my Magic Trixie signed by Jill Thompson, who was kind of sharing the booth space with him on that corner that they had there. And I kind of sidled over and I just, you know, wanted to introduce myself. And I said, hey, you know, I've loved, because I really enjoy a lot of what he's done. You know, I like Local and I like Demo. I'd been reading that since it first came out. And, you know, I'm reading Northlanders and enjoying it, and I go, but I don't know how you feel, because, you know, I know about, you know, that thing that kind of went back and forth. He's, oh no, I talked to John the other day, and, you know, he's, you know, really seems like a nice guy, and, you know, it all seemed to be good. So I was kind of also tentative, you know, because I know that the stuff that had gone up on his site. But that's good.
Well,
that's
good. The one comment he made, and it's one that I really agree with, is there's a tendency on the internet to have kind of a very negative kind of a vibe to everything, and how a lot of people will see a sales figure, kind of either take it out of context, misunderstand it, or for whatever reason, you know, say, well, that proves this thing is a failure this way, that way, or the other. And I'm like, you know, I try very hard when we do these discussions, when I write for comic book resources and stuff, to avoid labeling anything as a failure. Because, I mean, hell, they got the stuff out there, maybe it didn't sell as well as it could have or should have, whatever, but to me that's a failure of the market and stuff, not of the creator or of the product.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah, kind of going back to my original statement that got us on this discussion, which is, you know, Marvel or DC don't care whether we live or die. You know, the context of that was, you know, when I talk to a smaller publisher, you know, when I talk to Avatar or I talk to Big City or, you know, something like that, and, you know, none of these things, we're not going to be 100% positive on anybody's output, because we try to give our honest opinion of, do we like something or not?
Yeah.
But given that, you know, especially when we do the previews episode, you know, we try to, like, just say, and get the, you know, we try to have all the different podcasts on there because we want to have people who, different people have different tastes. And something that I don't care much for, you know, 20 other people will think it's the most brilliant thing that ever came out. So it's good to have someone who does have something appeal to them talk about exactly why it happened to appeal to them, right?
Yeah.
And then somebody who can then look at that and say, gee, you know, that sounds like something I would like also. Then they can go to their shop and they can ask their shop, please order this for me so I can see it. Because, again, you know, it doesn't matter what DC puts out. It's going to be in comic shops. There's virtually nothing that DC or Marvel is going to publish that is not going to have at least a copy show up on the racks of most comic shops, right? Whereas, you know, you look at Avatar or Big City or, again, you know, IDW, Oni, you know, a lot of these other publishers, and there's a lot of stuff that they put out that never sees the light of day in probably more than 50% of the comic shops in this country.
Yeah.
And, you know, my point is that, you know, talking to someone from, you know, Radical Comics or Boom Studios, you know, it's like they're very happy to talk to you, you know, because, you know, hey, if we can get the word out and, you know, an extra 10 people go into a shop and ask for one of our books, that's a really positive thing. As far as DC, you know, DC doesn't need us getting 10 more copies of Final Crisis being asked for. You know, they're going to sell 100,000 copies of that whether we talk about it or not.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my basic point there is that there are so many different kinds of comics. And you find this, and, you know, people rag on San Diego Con and say, oh, it's all about Hollywood. And, you know, it's really, there's Hollywood there. But, boy, I talked to 20 or 25 different comics publishers there.
Well, and
you know, and 50 creators.
Yeah.
And there's so much of that there that you can't say that San Diego's not about comics. I mean, it's so big. There are more comics creators, publishers, and comics for sale on the floor at San Diego than probably any other convention out there. It's just that they're so huge, there's all that other stuff too.
Yeah. Well, and I was really pleased how, you know, some of the creators and publishers I talked to had, you know, heard about the show we're doing and stuff, liked what we're doing, liked that we're promoting them and trying to get the word out about their books because, you know, they realize, I think, that it's a tough market out there. I mean, Marvel and DC definitely dominate it, and I really think that there's a ton of great indie books that just fly below people's radar. And I include my own radar in that because I picked up a number of things over the course of the convention that I hadn't even heard of the publisher. And we go through previews every month. Now, some of this is they're not necessarily in previews. Some of it is it's just easy to overlook some of these things. But, you know, I see the convention as kind of, you know, previews incarnate, if you will. Because there's just such a variety of stuff and you know, just such interesting people to talk to.
Yeah, and you know, and it's, I don't want to take an anti-Marvel DC stance here. I'm certainly not anti-Marvel DC.
Oh, God, it's no,
just,
yeah.
You know, I love Marvel and DC, and I read lots of Marvel and DC. It's just that, you know, if we're going to talk – and it's funny, you know, we talk about something like on the last episode of Weekly Spotlight. We talk about X-Men 500. Well, we don't often talk about event books, but – you know, by the time we talk about it, which, you know, we don't talk about things the day it comes out, there's at least five or six other podcasts that I've already seen that are already have done something about X-Men 500. So we're almost an afterthought when we talk about those things because everybody talks about those.
Yeah.
Ad infinitum. I would much rather – and again, you know what? People are going to buy X-Men 500 – whether we talk about it positively or negatively or whatever, it doesn't matter. People are going to buy it, you know, but I would rather talk about some of the hidden gems, you know, let's talk, you know, Booster Gold. You know, there's a good Manhunter.
Yeah.
You know, that one has been flirting with disaster, you know, a couple of times. You know, it actually was, I don't know whether canceled or on hiatus or whatever, but, you know, that one went away and it came back. And, you know, Blue Beetle is a great book from DC. You know, you go over to the Marvel side and, you know, there are similar stories of books that are really very good books that just fly under a lot of people's radars. You know, I like Ms. Marvel. A lot of people don't buy Ms. Marvel, even though she's in the Avengers and really tied into things. And, you know, Iron Fist, you know, well, that was a very critically acclaimed series, but it wasn't, I don't recall it being like, you know, a top. And it's not to say that they're doing bad. You know, they're doing good.
But I think, like, part of it is,
you know,
Marvel
shine a light on the non, you know, not the ones that are already at the top.
Well, I mean, Marvel and DC are playing at a different level, and that's great. I'm enjoying a lot of what they're both doing, but these are companies that have very big and powerful marketing departments. These are companies that are able to do, in the case of DC, what, a 60 by 90 foot booth at San Diego, and keep it filled for most of that time. They've got the marketing under control. I'd much rather, you know, I love talking about the DC Marvel book every week on the Weekly Spotlight. I love talking to the people at the convention, both the DC and Marvel and stuff, reading their books, whatever. But again, the impact we're going to have on their sales is negligible. Whereas I find discovering new books, promoting things like Toopy Doops, that I think are kind of definitely hidden gems in the sea of the comics that are out there, you know, better for everybody. I mean, better for DC and Marvel even.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I followed up with, you know, all the publishers I talked to. I shot them an email after Con, just kind of thanking them for, you know, taking the time to, you know, talk to me and, you know, all this. And one of them sends back to me, oh yeah, and here's a link to a PDF of, you know, one of our books, so you can see what we're all about. And I like sent them an email back. I was like, well, I've read and bought every issue of that series, and I've read and bought every issue of these other three series that you publish. And by the way, that book that you sent me a preview copy of, we reviewed that on this episode.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I think that's kind of like the difference here is, you know, we do have exposure to so many different things that, you know, we're not just looking at something if somebody sends us a preview copy of it. You know, we're of our own devices finding lots of different things and, you know, being fans. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I
want to move away from this and talk a little about some of the panels and stuff that we went to.
Sure. For me, that'll be a short discussion. I only went to two panels. I went to the Radical one. You were sitting right next to me, so I know you were there. That was a good presentation. They have a good lineup of creators, interesting lineup of titles coming out. One or two I hadn't heard of before this. The what was the one that had the giant mechs? That was Shrapnel? That one looks like fun.
Yes. The giant mechs as opposed to the little battle suits, which would be a Freedom Formula.
Right. Now, they seem to be doing some cool stuff.
I have to digress here. You talk about Radical Comics. I've seen a lot of people talking down on Radical and Boom, saying, oh, they're just existing to make films. Well, I think they're pretty non-repentant about the fact that they want to make film properties, but I don't see that as a bad thing. You know, because when I look at it, I look at the comics like Hercules and Caliber. I'm enjoying those as comics. I don't believe that they're a screenplay in comics form, and they've got beautiful art in them. And I think the idea, you know, and I talked to Barry and Dave at the show there, is that they're putting out a decent comic. And the fact that, you know, if they can put out a really good comic, it just makes it that much easier for them to sell it as a film property. And frankly, that's where the money is. I mean, these guys are businessmen. They've got contacts in Hollywood, and that's where they're going to make a lot of money, you know? And having John Woo making Caliber, that's going to be a cool movie. Having Peter Berg making Hercules, you know, it's like, wow, I'll see that. You know, it's just, you know, they're optioning these. They're not just optioning them. They have like actual A-list Hollywood talent. And that's the difference that I see. I mean, there's a difference between someone who's creating a comic book as a comic book, and then some Hollywood guy comes around, buys an option to it that they may or may not want to, you know, create it. And then they're maybe going to strip mine the idea and change it all around to make it into a movie. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to option Astro City, but okay, the confessor, instead of being a vampire priest, he needs to be a werewolf truck driver or something, you know, some kind of just like they totally change the idea around so they can have their mark on it, you know, and that's different than we're going in with our eyes open and we're making something. And by the virtue of the fact that we're making something with an eye towards it being on film at some point doesn't make the comic any less, because the comic is what it is. But it also means that the film that's going to be made is going to be relatively similar and true to the comic book vision. And it's not going to be 90 degrees skewed because somebody in Hollywood decided they had to like really tweak it in order to make it a viable film property. And I'd say the same thing for Boom. You know, if they get like, I think Station would make a great movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, they could make a movie or a TV show out of Potter's Field easily. And, you know, I don't think those comics are any less of a comic because they're amenable to having a film property come out of them. I think they're good comics.
Well, and that's the key, is both of these companies are doing solid comics. I certainly think they're pulling out all the stops to do professionally well-written, well-drawn, entertaining comics as comics. Now, personally, while I know that Radical is taking a lot of their properties to film and have certainly an eye on doing that, they're going, again, completely whole hog and doing very impressive production values and stuff for their comics. I applaud them for that. Boom, on the other hand, I think they're doing some great stuff. I don't know how many of these things are going to turn into film, but they certainly read as stuff that would make great films to me. And these guys are storytellers on both companies. There's no reason they should be looking just solely at comics. To me, the problem comes in when you get somebody who comes, does a 3-issue miniseries, shops that to Hollywood, gets the Hollywood thing, and leaves comics behind. That's where I see problems. Yeah, I think Boom and Radical are trying to start to blur that line between comics and film as much as possible, and I think that's good for the industry.
Right, and they're continuing to do new ideas and new series in comics, and whether they're tryouts for films or not, I don't really care, because they're continuing to do relatively entertaining comics that, you know, whether they turn into a movie or whatever down the line, you're right. I mean, they are continuing to do the comic series. And now Boom is, you know, they're partnering up with Disney Pixar Studios. They're going to be doing Monsters, Inc. comic, an Incredibles comic that Mark Waid's going to be writing. They're doing some Muppet Show comics. I was never a big Muppet Show fan myself. I'm not the right age, but I know a lot of people are huge fans of the Muppets, and you know, that'll be really great, you know. And can they revitalize that franchise? You know, it's a good thing if it's done the right way. And I have a hard time seeing the heartburn that some people have, because it's just where things are moving. And I would rather see the creative people going into the Hollywood connection with their eyes open and doing stuff that's amenable for it, instead of doing something that's kind of not film worthy unless you really tweak it around and make it almost unrecognizable from its original roots, which usually is bad, right?
Yeah.
You see Marvel, right? When they changed things around and really monkeyed with them, those movies didn't do that well. But look at Iron Man, you know, it stayed really pretty faithful to the core concept of the character, or Spider-Man, you know, or even X-Men. you know, they change certain things around, but they stay relatively faithful to the core concepts, and those films do well.
And bringing that full circle back to Con, at the Marvel booth, they had the Ironmonger suit. They had a lot of stuff going about, you know, the movies and stuff like that, and they're using that to draw people back to the comics. And I think that is where the big win is, because, again, like you're saying, by being true to the comics in the film, it allows for more of a crossover audience. And I think everyone will agree that there's a much bigger audience out there for television and film than we're currently seeing, you know, enjoying comics. So to see people from comics moving towards Hollywood, I think is logical. The really fun stuff I'm seeing is people from Hollywood moving towards comics. When I was having breakfast one morning, as we were finishing up, the table right next to us, a couple of people sat down. William Catt, Bill Culp, Connie Selica, and Dennis, I forget his last name, the stunt guy, from Greatest American Hero. They were all at Con to promote the Greatest American Hero comic that's coming out. And, you know, William Catt is coming out of the Hollywood stuff trying to go into the comics. I think that's great. Now, if he then turns around and is able to leverage this, some of it back to Hollywood, that's great too. You know, I don't get why people are so negative on some of that. The other thing I saw and talked with her for a bit, and my sister talked with her quite a bit, was Deborah Pratt was there for her Vision Quest novels that she's doing. And it's a series of novels. She's thinking about doing comics down the line, doing some stuff on the internet. I don't know if it was MMO or exactly what all her plans were. I've got it in the press kit, which my sister basically stole, as she did with the book. But Deborah Pratt was one of the executive producers and lead writers for Quantum Leap. So here's somebody who's definitely been around the block in Hollywood, done some amazing stuff there, and is saying, I want to do novels, and I want to take my properties into the comic book arena. And, you know, we may see over the coming years Hollywood kind of realizing that this is a core audience that, while much smaller than the movies and TV audiences, is a very influential and key audience. So it'll be fun to see if we start to see a bit more of an influx from Hollywood, and not in the manner of writers dabbling while they're on hiatus from their TV show and it taking second fiddle, but to them taking it seriously as another creative outlet that can be very beneficial for them.
Well, I really think that that's true, because, look, I mean, Entertainment Weekly had a Comic-Con issue.
Yeah.
Right? And Hollywood, I'm reading now, they consider the previews and premieres and promotions that they do at San Diego to be more influential than Cannes.
Well, my sister,
because that's their audience for that kind of stuff, you know. It's like
my sister was telling me that one of the networks, I forget if it was Fox or NBC, was looking at what shows they had on the bubble that survived and which ones didn't, and the difference was what had been promoted at Comic-Con last year. And that's why Fox in particular brought pretty much everything they had. Now, add to that, outside the Gaslamp Hilton was the terracotta statues for the upcoming Mummy film. It's a, hey, go take your photos with them sort of promotional thing. In one of the elevators at my hotel I was staying at was sponsored by Up, which is a Disney Pixar film. This year, the freebie stuff expanded outside the convention center between the Gaslamp Hilton and the convention center. I had one day, I wound up with a free bag for the Jurassic Fight Club thing from the History Channel, a couple of free comics, a magazine. I mean, I'm walking into the convention center and getting loaded up with freebies. It's a definite marketing opportunity for companies, you know, both Hollywood and not, but mainly Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely an event. And, you know, some of the panels I went to, the Big Bang Theory panel. And I think it's one of the most hilarious shows on TV. I mean, they're geeks. They like Star Trek and Star Wars and comics. And some people say it's, you know, kind of makes fun of us, but it doesn't really. I mean, it's pretty respectful. And the guys on there are kind of geeky themselves. I put a couple of pictures from the panel up on the
up on our forum,
the thread on the forum. But you know, the what was really nice is they had the whole cast there, and these guys are really truly friends with one another. You can tell, and it shows in the chemistry of the show. The one guy who was on Roseanne also, he was Darlene's boyfriend. He actually reads comics. You know, the other guys don't really read comics that much, but, you know, he does read comics and, you know, kind of injects that into the series. So,
cool.
You know, it's fun. And, you know, I went and saw also on Friday the Radical panel and the Boom Studios panel, but I also went, it was a great panel, that 70s comics panel. And they had, I'm going to forget who all was at this thing. They had Len Wein at it. They had Bernie Wrightson. They had, talk about something while I look this up, because I want to really give this one its due.
Yeah, well, that's one of Mark Evanier's panels. And he usually does, geez, half a dozen panels every year. And almost all of them are definitely worth going to. He assembles a top-notch lineup of people. He also, both on the comics side, sometimes on the Hollywood, sometimes he does one-on-one interviews. He also tends to do some of the ones with the cartoon voices, I think. So almost any one of Mark Evanier's panels is well worth going to. I didn't make it to any of them this year, but I really wasn't in a panel-going mood this year. I wanted to kind of walk the floor, talk to some publishers and creators, and, you know, just get I do a little shopping. I didn't do all that much, but just get a feel for kind of what the vibe for the industry was this year.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Okay, so Mark Evanier was hosting it. It had Mike Barr, Mike Grell, Paul Galassi, Jim Starlin, Joe Staton, Len Wein, and Bernie Wrightson. I mean, these guys, you know, were comics in the 70s pretty much. I mean, this was a tremendous lineup. And the best part about it is, and I didn't go to a lot of the DC – I didn't go to any of the DC panels because I knew they'd all be on the internet. And I listened to a lot of them since the con. The thing that I found interesting is, like, you know, you ask questions on the 70s panel and they answer them. You know, like they'll tell a story about – you know, back then, and, you know, what went on and all this. You ask Jeff Johns a question, and if it's not about something in the past, it's like, well, you'll need to read the book to find that out, which I can understand. They don't want to have spoilers, but it's almost pointless to have a Q&A session because 50% of the questions that you ask at the panel are answered with, well, read the book that's going to come out in 2 months, or, you know, read the book that just came out. You know, someone asked Jeff Johns, who is the character at the end of this thing? I wasn't really sure. And his answer was, gee, I thought it was kind of obvious. And he didn't tell the guy who it was. You know, it's like, well,
if it's kind of obvious, then say who it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that was the difference there, you know, is that I kind of like the panels where, one, you get the guys being entertaining, but, you know, also that they're giving an actual answer to a question that's asked of them. So I went to that panel. I went to the Mark and Sergio panel, which was entertaining as always. I went to the Quick Draw panel. You know, the Quick Draw was pretty funny. It had Sergio, of course. It had Scott Shaw. And it had the guy who does Mother Goose and Grimm in the newspapers. And I apologize. I don't remember what his name is. And he also does a lot of political cartooning and stuff. And, you know, Mark Evanier, again, was, you know, hosting that. And he would just give topics, you know, draw who would be a terrible running mate for Barack Obama, you know. And they have to sketch something really quick and, you know Scott Shaw really quick sketches a Klansman or something. I was like, okay, you win. You know, no one can come up with a better one for that. But, you know, it's just he'd throw out some weird topic and they would draw some cartoon in, you know, like a minute to go with it. But that's always a fun panel. And then Scott Shaw's Oddball Comics, where he just shows these crazy, wonky comic covers from over the years, you know, and has kind of a humorous commentary that goes along with it. One thing I will say about the panels that was different this year than last year and other years in the past is each panel had such a huge line to get into it. You know, there used to be like, and I'm not talking about like, you know, Hall H Hollywood things. I didn't go to any of those, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and, you know, Big Bang Theory, okay, I mean, that's a TV show. It's on, you know, on the air. It had like the whole, all the actors at it and stuff. So, I mean, there's going to be a big line for that. And there was a big, that was in a room that held probably 2,500 people. It was in Hall 6, C, D, E, and F.
Yeah.
And the room was totally full. But, you know, it, those kind of panels I can see. But even something like Mark and Sergio or Oddball Comics, they had lines before these things were coming out. You know, and you couldn't just walk into the room and sit down. There were lines for everything this year, every panel. And I think that contributed to how relatively uncrowded the exhibition floor was on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
I think part of it,
people
though,
were in panels.
I think part of it, though, was they didn't have much of a break between panels. Like the Radical one, no sooner was it done than 2 minutes later, the Boom crew is already moving in for their panel, and they're trying to, you know, the convention people are trying to, you know, get the Radical panel people out of there, both the people on the panel and the attendees, and the next crowd in. And they seem to have a very short turnaround time for the room. And I think if they had had a little bit more of a cushion there of a few minutes, sure, it would shorten the panels and stuff, but, you know, we had to wait outside for the podcasting panel for a few minutes longer than I had expected because of how long the panel prior to that was going.
Right.
So, I mean, it makes sense to maximize the length of the panels and stuff. That's cool. But it seemed like there were more people milling about outside the panel rooms this year than ever before, and maybe a little needlessly so.
But I guess it did make the exhibition floor, except on Sunday, very, very pleasant, actually. I mean, it was crowded, but not ridiculously crowded, you know?
Well, they got slammed by a poster tube the once. I don't think it bruised too badly. I mean, it was packed. There were some areas that I think were much more slammed than others. Others you could almost always walk through. There was quite a bit of time I was getting jostled a bit more than I was comfortable with, but not too bad and not too often and not as bad as it could have been given it was a complete sellout a week in advance.
Well, Sunday was really bad. I thought Sunday was the most crowded, and my theory on that is there were fewer panels that were big draws that people, I mean, it was like Kids Day, and there were a lot of, you know, there were panels, but I don't think there were the big draw panels on Sunday that there were on the other days. I don't think there was as much attendance upstairs. Plus, people who had been in panels most of the con, well, I got to see the exhibit floor at some point. This is my last chance. It was so crowded on Sunday. I mean, I left around 2:30. It was too crowded for me. And it was so crowded also that I think there was so much – I don't know if people were buying or anything, but I didn't see really the deals and stuff that I had seen in past years as I was looking around on Sunday.
Neither did I, now that you mention it.
And I think that was because there was so many people shopping and buying on Sunday that the dealers didn't have to mark stuff down. You know, more power to them. You know, you get the – you know, make their money. But, you know, that was, you know, how that went. You know, I didn't get as many sketches as I had in the past.
Only sketch I got was the Toopy Doops one, which I thought was really cool.
I picked up a Red Sony I had commissioned from Dave Wachter, and while I was there, I saw this Iron Man in the original armor that he had just sitting on the table that he had done on spec, and it was really nice. I have a picture of it up on the forum. And I bought that also, and I got a Jetta sketch from Anton, and I got this really nice Red Sonja and Conan from Ernie Chan,
cool.
Who was just a really nice guy. I was walking around because I still think – I don't think I hit every aisle of the con. I think there were areas that I missed this year.
I'm pretty sure I hit everything. I'm not going to say I remember it. I'm not going to say I saw everything, but I know I walked the entire floor. Because I got very methodical about that. Just because I want to at least see the edge of every booth. I don't make it into some of the bigger ones that are too crowded.
I kept skipping that area where all the video games and, you know, Sci-Fi Channel and stuff were, because it was always so crowded.
Yeah.
And I just like, I would always end up just going by that part. And I don't think I ever made it up and down all the aisles in that area. That was in the 4,000s or high 3,000s.
Well, one of the things I did this year that worked pretty well is once I got past to the whole D break where you kind of get to the older part of the convention center and it does that kind of turn in the main aisle kind of thing, is I started just going up and down the first block of booths all the way down and then back down the center, the next block of booths and so forth, versus going all the way up and down the aisles. Because when you hit the small press area and a few other things, things don't line up nicely. So rather than have to make decisions as to which way do I go and potentially missing some booths, you know, I did kind of the shorter zigzag. But I hit a lot of places. Let's see, what else did I bought a few other things in the process. You were mentioning Dave Wacker. I bought a few things from the Dial R Studios he was with. I got.
Did you get that Guns of Shadow Valley?
I got the Guns of Shadow Valley. I got Hocal by Pat Loika. Picked up Billy Baines' Is Yellow Cupid Number 1. So I'm looking forward to reading those. Also, in that general neck of the woods, not too far away off along the Harborside Drive wall was Stormbringer Studios. I picked up the first two issues of Stormbringers. That looked interesting. Also in that basic area was the Tom Zoller, who does Love and Capes. And I picked up his two sketchbooks of Powerful Women, Volumes 1 and 2. Those look really cool.
I totally missed him. I don't think I ever hit that aisle.
It was.
I wish I would have, because I would have liked to have gotten those sketchbooks.
Yeah, those are great. I got those. And also, because he was sharing the booth for a bit, I got a copy of Pantheon, Welcome to the Machine, which is by Lone Star Press. And that's Bill Williams' company. I've known.
Bill Williams. And
Bill Williams is the guy running the company. And yeah. I want to have him on our show at some point because. He's done stuff on the creative side, the publishing side. He used to run one of the stores here in town, and he ran a distribution company. So he's kind of got the I don't want to say the trifecta or hat trick because he's got more than three things, but for the whole comic life cycle. But Pantheon was written by Bill Willingham prior to him doing Fables and that kind of stuff. And it's a superhero tale of, you know, what if the big, you know, event happens or whatever and things don't go too good. It's definitely something, if you're liking what Willingham's doing these days or if you liked Elementals and stuff, definitely something you should check out. So, got that, yeah. Which was cool.
And Bill Willingham, like, mentioned that on his Fables panel. You know, he said, hey, you know, go down and... pick up the
trade
Pantheon
for it, yeah.
And, you know, bring it by and I'll autograph it, you know.
I think it's probably his least known work, but it's good fun stuff. What else did I buy? Bought Descendants 1 through 3 and the Descendants Giant Size from pen to paper. That was one of the smaller press things that I just had never seen or heard about. It looked cool, so I picked it up.
Yeah, one of the things you missed that, you know, just like I missed the Love and Capes, but Big City Comics, and I don't know if they were running this all weekend but or just on Sunday, but they had a deal where you got like every comic that they had put out pretty much for $15. It was like 21 comics. You got like 1 through 6 of Totem, Tempest, and Dragon Cross, and issues 1, 2, and 3 of Omega One. Which we already have and we talked about on the show, so I'll probably take those three, Omega 1, 1, 2, and 3, and they'll be a prize in some contest that we run at some point.
Yeah, totally missed that because I'm curious about their other books, and if I'd had the chance to get those for $15, I definitely would have taken them up on that offer. So if anyone from Big City is out there, no. It's like, damn it, missed that. What else did I get? I got the Marry Me trade paperback from whichever company that was.
Blatant Comics. I got the trade also because I had just read that online, so it's nice having a hard copy of it.
I got the 100 Girls trade paperback. That's something I'd been thinking about getting and just never got it locally, didn't pre-order it, so picked it up there.
That's a really good story if people haven't read it. I got the issues as that was coming out. That was Arcana. if I'm not mistaken.
And then I found something which I'm really curious about. It's Codename Power, the first two issues. That's from Respark. And it's essentially a more serious take on the Power Ranger stuff. So exactly the kind of thing I've been looking for a while. So, you know, we'll see how that works out. And if they do more issues, hopefully they will. That was pretty much all the comics I got. I picked up Contour, the DVD, from the Stunt People. That looked like a fun action film. It was only about $15. I figured, why not? And then over at Atlas Games, they're the people who usually host Aaron Williams of PS238. I bought some games from them. They had like 3 for $10 rack. So I picked up D20 Relics, D20 Magic, GURPS Alpha Centauri. Also picked up the GURPS Spaceships. And then two of the Hero Games modules, Ultimate Energy Projector, Ultimate Skill. Or Skills, plural, maybe. But really, that was about it for me for the shopping. I didn't buy all that much this year. Picked up some freebies here and there. But my sister made off like a bandit, though. She wound up with 30 or 40 paperback novels.
Yeah, I was walking by one day. She saw me. She was standing in line at the Disney booth, and I was trying to get from point A to point B. And she grabbed me and said, "Bob, come stand in line with me." I'm like holding place for some other people to come up. And I'm okay. And I couldn't, I need to get, you know, get an extra Lost t-shirt for me. And I'm like, okay. And then like her group of girlfriends all came swarming into line. And, you know, we were close up to the front, and I said, "Oh, I'll stay and I'll get a t-shirt." So I picked up a Sleeping Beauty t-shirt for Janine from
cool. Yeah. Kathleen, wound up, like I said, with a lot of free stuff here and there. She knows how to work that system. So,
and I bought a lot of stuff, though. Again, I took some pictures. You can see it on the forum.
I took some photos Sunday morning, which if I can figure out which SD card I put them on, I'll pull them off and put them up. I got into the hall early that morning and got some photos of some of the booths before things got totally impacted. So, did not take many photos.
One thing I decided is not to stand in line anymore to get in the morning. On Saturday and Sunday, we went and we got there. Now, interesting. Actually, no. Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, I got to the hall at 6:45, and parking under the convention center was already sold out.
Hmm.
So I parked in the parking lot, you know, next door. But, you know, given the line Nazis, I just got tired of, like, standing in line. So we just, like, you know, put Neil Gaiman Book on Tape on the car stereo, and we just sat in the car for several hours and listened to that. And then we, once 9:30 rolled around, we walked in. You know, and I didn't get as many freebies that you get, like, right when you're standing in. But, I mean, I can't stand in line for 2 hours. I used to bring a little camp chair. They wouldn't even let me set that up and sit in it.
Wow.
Just ridiculous the way that they're doing that line management. But, you know, oh well.
I usually did breakfast at the hotel. And when I know, because we could see the lines from there. And when that started to kind of, you know, be clear they were letting people into the hall, that's when I usually finish up breakfast and head over. But that meant most mornings I get there, you know, 9:45-ish or so. Again, Sunday morning was the only time I really got there early. Now, the other thing I did, we haven't talked about too much, I don't even know that I've told you about it much, Bob, is Friday morning I headed over to the Smith Micro booth, got there at about 10:30 and talked to their people for probably better part of an hour. They do a couple of pieces of software that I was very interested in, one of which is Poser that I was familiar with. It's a 3D figure rendering program, which in the first version, it was like a wooden mannequin thing that you could use for positioning or whatever, but it was, you know, compared to what it can do now, incredibly, you know, primitive and crude. Nowadays, you can do photorealistic people rendering with hair, cloth dynamics, lip syncing because it does animation. It's just they've totally blown the functionality out of the water. So that was very interesting. And the thing they demoed for me the most, because I was very curious about, was Manga Studio. And while it's called Manga Studio, it's also perfectly applicable for creating comic books. And it's kind of an all-in-one program that would take you from laying out the panels to putting the art, drawing the art, putting in the lettering, putting in the zippitones and the speed lines and stuff if you're doing manga or want to do that in an American-style comic, the lettering, and making it production-ready. So I was very curious about both of those programs from the standpoint of, you know, the cost of production is getting to be a bigger and bigger issue in setting cover prices these days because of the lower print runs and selling levels, that if somebody could use programs like this to kind of expedite that process and make it more cost effective. And it certainly seems like that's potentially very doable. So I found that very educational and eye-opening. It was very cool. And they seemed to have good traffic at their booth. They were also showing off a painter-type program, or a competitor to painter, I should say, which is a, you know, natural brush-type art tool. And I forget the name of their product. It's new and not one I was familiar with. But they had one of those Wacom tablets set up that's also a monitor. So, I mean, you see the paint stroke going down as you're doing it, where you're doing it, which is really cool. So that was something I spent some time doing. That was a lot of fun, checking out, again, Manga Studio and Poser. So
it's interesting because, you know, it's like different people, and we have some clips we're going to play in a little bit also, but, you know, there's so many different kinds of experiences you could have at this one convention, and I think you'll see some of those different experiences reflected in the different clips that we're going to play.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just – you know, my experience there was very different than yours. You know, I went to a few more panels. Some people went to way more panels than I did. Some people might have done more shopping. Some people in past years I've gotten more sketches and, you know, just all different kind of things. It's just there are so many things to do at this convention. It's like a sensory overload to some extent, but it's so much fun also, with so many different things to choose from.
Yeah. It's, again, the diversity there is just astounding. If you want to go literally play video games all day, there are places in the hall you can do that. If you want to watch TV presentations all day, you can do that. If you want to go buy comics all day, you can do that. If you want to talk with creators all day, you can do that. If you want to mix and match all that stuff, you can do that. It was, all in all, it was a fun convention. I accomplished a lot of things that I had set out to do. You know, some of it was just, you know, talking to Brian Wood face to face, talking to a few of the publishers and creators and stuff, buying a couple of things. There's one or two things in hindsight I didn't know at the time I kind of needed to do that I wish that I'd known and therefore would have done, but that happens. It was a fun convention. My only complaint is I need those shoes that you were telling me about.
Al Sparrow's got. I need to get them too. It's like, man, Al, any tip that you gave, that's the best one if they actually work out. So I'm gonna have to go and try to find those.
Yeah, post on our forum with a web link, please, and a reminder next year. Because jeez. But I collected a ton of business cards this time around, some people I want to stay in contact with, and it was cool. It was a good convention, and certainly hearing other people's experience on it with the clips we're going to play should be a lot of fun. Oh, the other person I talked to at length a couple of times that we haven't mentioned was Rich Vincent over at Drawboxes, CollectionDrawer.com.
I didn't even see their booth at all.
You're kidding.
I must have missed another aisle.
You missed.
Totally didn't see the Drawbox aisle.
Okay. I saw their stuff 3 years ago when they were hidden in the small press stuff. And then, you know, I wait a while. I bought 180 of their boxes. Since then, they've added the box locks to kind of anchor the boxes with each other so ones on the tops don't tip, which I thought was a brilliant innovation. They've introduced the shorter length boxes, which I thought was smart. Those are the ones you're using in your closet now, aren't they, the 18-inch deep ones? And
Yeah, they are. I'm going to try to buy some of the longer ones, I think, to go in the garage.
Well, what what he's done for those is he's added, and he was test marketing at the convention, a divider type system. It has two cardboard things that kind of go along the inner edge of the box with dividers that you can place at various points to where if the box isn't totally full, stuff won't fall, or if you want to have leave a space for, you know, more issues of something, you can. I thought it was really clever. And I'm just constantly amazed as how he keeps improving his product. So at some point, we ought to have him on either for a back issue spotlight or a super fan spotlight or something.
Yeah. I love my short ones. I just wish that, you know, I had closets like they have apparently. Where is he from? The Midwest somewhere?
He is Denver.
Yeah. I wish that they made closets in California that were a couple of inches deeper, because then I could put the long drawer boxes in my closet. But I don't want to make a fashion statement. You've met my wife. She's really, really kind and very understanding of my ways. But there's only so far I'm going to push it, and I'm not going to like be lining drawer boxes up out in the hallway or out in the public in a room or something. I mean, if they can be in a closet with the door closed on it, you know, I can keep them. You know,
yeah, yeah.
I don't want to have them like out in public. You know, I can put them down in the garage. You know, that's what I'm going to do with some more.
So, yeah, he was somebody I talked to quite a bit. He's fun to talk to because he's like us. He's been reading comics for ages, certainly a lot longer than I have. But part of that's just he's just enough older. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because he was getting in, it sounded like, pretty much almost on the ground floor, give or take 2-3 years on the Marvel stuff. And it's like, just damn, I wish I had that opportunity. So...
Well, that's like you met him at the dinner on Friday night, I believe.
Oh, your friend John.
At the Marriott, John.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like just that. Like he's about 8-10 years older than me, and he got in at the very beginning of the Silver Age.
He was fun to talk to. Thank you for introducing
him. So he's collecting now, you know, he collects Golden Age stuff, and he has almost a complete run of All-Star.
Wow.
I think he's missing a couple of issues, you know, all the way back.
That's cool.
You know, but he's got complete runs of all the Silver Age Marvel stuff.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun at dinner Friday night. It was you, me, your friend John. It was – who else did we have?
Chris Gallo.
Chris Gallo.
Ralph Werner.
Ralph, yeah. It's a total of 7 of us. Who am I forgetting about? It's been so long, and my brain's fried from the 2-day drive back as well.
That was when Steven and Greg, I had foisted them off on their cousins, so they weren't with us.
No. Was it – it wasn't Tony. It wasn't him. It was
– Chris's friend was there. Paul, I think his name was.
Okay. And I am completely spacing, and I apologize for this, on who that 7th person was. It was Ralph. It was – yeah.
They'll remind us and say, you idiots.
I am so sorry. Forgive me.
Yeah.
But keep in mind,
the thing with this con, though, is like so many things happened in such a short period of time, and we're assailed with so much information from every different direction.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I mean, I missed complete aisles at the con. I missed seeing various people. A couple other things that really stood out for me. I went over and we talked about Rogue Angel, Teller of Tales. So I made it down to Artist Alley and I talked to Renee DeLiz
a little bit.
And I had brought my 5 issues of Rogue Angel down there, and she autographed all of them for me, and we chatted a little bit. In fact, the Zatanna that she did for me, that's the little sample that she's got on her little advertisement for selling sketches at her table at the con. I'm like, you did this Zatanna for me.
Yeah.
Oh, you're – okay. And I also, you know, like Steve Bryant and Dave Micah and Lynn, the Bushy Tales guys, and Anton Wade.
Yeah,
and
Anton.
Dave Wachter and all those guys, Dave Dwanch, all these guys were great guys to talk to and interact with. This was just a tremendous experience to meet these guys. I talked to Katie Cook down in Artist Alley also. I had a conversation with Steve Rude, Frank Cho, you know, just lots of different people. And Stan Sakai, he's the nicest guy on earth. I was picking up an original art or an original sketch for Kevin Freeman from him. And then I, you know, picked up, I get the sketchbook from him every year, but you know, he is good. And then Alcatraz High, I got the yearly issue of that that comes out from him. And I talked
was that
to
a
Eric.
New issue? I was thinking that was,
number 4 was new.
Oh, I didn't see number 4. I saw 1 through 3.
Because he had number 4, but it's been like 3 years since number 3 came out.
Yeah.
Because he did number 3, and then he did number 3.5.
Oh, I didn't even know about
that. Then he did a zero issue. And now this year he did issue 4. And it's like, I'm picking it up. I'm like, it's been so long since I read this.
Well, remind me next year, and I'll buy, sounds like, 3 or 4 things from him. Jeez.
Yeah. It's Bobby Rubio.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the nicest guy, too. But he works for... one of the animation studios. So, I mean, he's got a day job and his wife had twins and,
wow,
you know, he's got a lot of, you know, real life, you know, just kind of inflicting itself on preventing him from a little more regular with coming out with that.
Somebody I didn't see this year that I usually saw was Sean Wang from Runners.
I don't remember seeing him either.
He, in past years, has had a booth there with a good video of his stuff running and whatnot. That's how I think I found out about his book originally. He may not have been there this year. But all in all, I would say everybody I talked to, with probably only one or two exceptions, was really nice, really cool. There was one point I more or less got chased out of the Mattel booth, but okay, they're busy, whatever. And it was nothing personal. It was just, you know, I was apparently either in the way or where I was not supposed to be when I was not supposed to be there or some such.
Yeah, I was standing. I was same thing, like the guys who play Harold and Kumar, you know, from those movies. They were signing at the one booth. They were in like this little prison cell kind of setup. So I kind of like stopped to, you know, go, you know, gawk at them. And I was like taking a picture and like some, you can't stand here, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. But by and large, there's only, you know, one or two people that I thought were a little either standoffish or whatever. But, I mean, Khan is a meat grinder and frequently does not bring out the best in people, so it's totally understandable. It's just – it's an intense couple of days. It's sensory overload. It's tons of fun, but it's very draining. So if you've
and
never
– forgot one more. But Frank Bedore, who does the Looking Glass – and you have to get those books. If you don't get them, I'm going to – I can't associate with you anymore. But I love the Looking Glass Wars. He's written some extremely entertaining work here. He also did the Hatter M.
Right, right.
Trade paperback. These books are great. I stopped and talked to him again for a little while, and he's just the nicest guy you could imagine. And I love talking to him at the different cons where I see him, just – what's coming up, but you know, check it out. I mean, it's just fun.
It's one of those things, if you're at all into comics and if you're listening to us talk for this long about the convention, you certainly are. Hell, even if you're just into movies and television shows or other parts of popular entertainment, if you can make it out to the San Diego Comic Book Convention or Comic-Con International, as they're now calling it, at some point, you know, in coming years, you really should. It is... Again, it's a very long and involved event or whatever, but it is so much fun. It is very well run and put together, and it covers just so much ground in terms of what's out there for comics, television, movies, games, art, you know, everything under the sun, really. It's something you really should try to make it to if, you know. I don't go to that many conventions each year. Really, San Diego's the big one, but after that, I don't see much point in going to too many others. Certainly, there are other excellent conventions out there to be had, but San Diego at the moment is the big one. So, you've already listened to the episode we put up last week with the podcasting panel. That was interesting to participate in. The second time I've been on it. Your first time, though, Bob. And we've got a couple of clips from a few of the people we talked to and stuff over the weekend on what their experience at San Diego was like. So what do you say we play those and call it an episode?
Yep. Sorry for running so long, guys. We could talk another 4 hours about this convention.
Yeah, it's just... probably. But instead of us talking, we're going to let Chris Gallo tell us about his experience. We're going to listen to what Ralph Warner had done over the weekend. That should be a lot of fun. And also,
and Ralph has three separate clips. He organized it by various topic areas. He had one about the panels that he went to, one about his shopping experience, and one about various cosplay and people in costumes. And he took a lot of really great pictures of this stuff too.
And he's put some photos up on our forum, and the guy knows how to take pictures. Some of those are excellent photos. There are a couple where not only are they nice, crisp, good photos, but they really capture, I think, the essence of a couple of people, which I thought was really cool. So thanks, Ralph, for posting those. And if you've got more photos, please put them up. They're a joy to look at. And then also we've got a clip from Lynn Workman from Bushy Tales and his experience at the con. So we'll play those.
Hey John and Bob, Chris Gallo here, webhead on the forums. Just want to let you know about my San Diego Comic-Con experience. This was a great year for me. I had a lot of fun, met a lot of great people, got to hang out with you guys for a while. It was good seeing you guys again. This year I attended a lot more panels than I normally do. One I was most looking forward to was the Lost panel. I knew that panel would be the most crowded, so I planned to attend the Heroes panel that was right before that and stay through the Lost. The Heroes panel started about 10 o'clock, so I planned to get there early. I got there about 6:15. What I found was there was about 2,000 people already in line, and they all had planned to do the exact same thing, attend the Heroes panel, then the Lost panel. I have to say, the Lost panel was great, but the Heroes panel was better. Heroes brought in the entire cast, and they also played the season premiere episode in its entirety. It wasn't until after the Heroes panel that I realized how much I missed that show, and that I'm so looking forward to seeing the new season of Heroes. Another panel I attended was a 70s comic panel. It had a lot of great 70s creators on. The guests were Paul Glusey, Mike Barr, Bernie Wrightson, Len Wein, Mike Grell, Joe Staton, Jim Starlin, and it was hosted by Mark Evanier. It was a lot of fun listening to these guys reminisce about the old days. I can't remember which creator told this story, but he was working on an Archie knockoff comic for Gold Key, and he had created this character called Wheeler. And in one of the panels, it showed a car at like a lover's point parked, and the word balloon showed the girl saying, "How about that Wheeler?" Well, at the last minute, the editor decided to change all the characters' names. The characters were changed to Tom, Dick, and Harry, and Wheeler was changed to Dick. Then they hired some kid just to go through all the dialogue and just change out the names. Well, as you can see, there was a problem. And at the last minute, they had to pull the entire run or run the risk of getting in trouble with the Comic Code Authority. Well, that's all I wanted to share for now. Just wanted to pass this on to all your listeners. If you've never been to San Diego, you get a chance to go, go. It's incredible. It's really hard to put into words that convention. It's got something for everybody. Thanks for letting me share my 2008 San Diego Comic-Con experience. Well, back to you guys.
This is Ralph Warner, Atomic 99, on the comicbookpage.com forums, and today I'm going to talk about the panels that were at the 2008 San Diego Comic-Con. If you can pick one word that would describe the San Diego Comic-Con, that word would be crowded. However, there's plenty to see if you want to venture into the crowds of 125,000 people that were predicted to have gone to the convention this year. And there are lots of good panels, so many that I only made maybe about one-fifth of the panels that I had listed that I wanted to see. But let's quickly run down the panels that I did manage to see at the convention. On Thursday, I saw the spotlight on Todd Klein, who's probably one of the top letterers in the comics field right now. Also that day, I saw very briefly Freddie Williams II's How to Break into Comics, and also the third annual podcasting panel was on Thursday, and we had a good representation of different comic book podcasts on the panel, and a pretty good turnout in the room. Afterwards, a bunch of us went to dinner at the Tilted Kilt, which is highly recommended. I did manage to get up and get in line early Friday morning for the Watchmen movie panel. I think I was one of the few that did not actually see the movie trailer that's out there in the theaters. So everything that I saw that day was brand new to me. Zack Snyder, the director, brought an extended cut of the trailer that's been showing in the theaters. Still no dialogue with this, and it was running with a soundtrack from the Smashing Pumpkins in the background. But the panel had just about every actor from the playing a major role in the movie. So we got to listen to their voices and match them up with the characters that we'll be seeing on screen next year. Also on Saturday, I managed to catch a couple spotlights. Spotlight on Dean Yeagle, or Yeagle, however you pronounce it. He's a pinup artist who works for Playboy. His style is kind of more cartoony, more Disney-like. He worked as an animator. And his main character that he features in his cartoons is Mandy. So he gave us a little demo on how to draw Mandy and talked about his career working in the art field for a number of decades. The other spotlight I checked out, which I actually caught at the end, was on Bernie Wrightson. And probably one of the best panels that most people missed. And one of the most important was a panel by Colleen Durand called Resources for Creators. She spent 1 hour, a very brisk hour, going through a list of different resources that comic book creators and other artistic types can use in terms of lawyers, resources for taxes, all sorts of benefits out there. Some of these are for free, how to get represented by lawyers for a cheap price. All these things that she presented from her own experiences working in the comics field for a number of years. On Saturday, I managed to catch a few other panels, including the spotlight on Brian Hitch. The moderator and Brian were drinking out of wine glasses. Now, whether that was actual apple juice or wine, I'm not quite sure. So that's a mystery to be solved later. I also sat through the Things That Go Bump, the horror writing panel, which featured an array of different writers working in the horror genre, including Adrienne Barbeau, who is actually still looking very good for her age. And finally, I briefly sat in on the Comic-Con Film School panel. There was a number of panels throughout the week, and this was, I think, part three that featured how to work with the actors and crew, things that you should do if you're a director or a producer on a film. And on Sunday, I didn't catch any panels. There was one key panel that I hoped to catch, but ended up missing, and that was the tribute to Dave Stevens, who was the creator of The Rocketeer, one of my favorite characters. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make that panel, along with several other panels that I'm kicking myself for missing, including Steve Rude's painting workshop, the Doctor Who and Torchwood panel on Thursday. There was a Modern Masters panel on Thursday, and a whole bunch of other panels that I had on my list to see. That was a rundown of some of the panels you could have found at the 2008 San Diego Comic-Con. There's plenty of panels to see and not enough time to see them all, so you have to pick and choose the ones you really want to see. And there you have it. And right now I'm going to give you a rundown of my shopping list from the San Diego Comic-Con 2008. To give you a quick list of the things that I found in terms of toys, from the Diamond Select booth, I was able to get the Invaders Mini Mates, which features Cap and the Human Torch, Submariner, and Bucky. Unfortunately, Toro didn't make the cut. Also at the Diamond Select booth, I found four of the Star Trek Retro Migos that I didn't have. I have the first two, which was Captain Kirk and the Klingon, but fortunately was able to find at the booth the Migos for the Romulan, the Andoran, Mr. Spock, and Dr. McCoy. Also for toys, I found four different plush Captain America toys that I got. In terms of apparel, I did get a free Watchmen swag t-shirt from the Watchmen panel. For artwork, I managed to get two prints from Dave Dwanch. First one being his Mary Marvel print, and then he also kicked in the Batman and the Joker print. For original artwork, I got three pieces from Steve Bryant, the creator of Athena Voltaire. I got a pencil head sketch he did of Athena. The second piece was a pinup or possibly a cover illustration of Athena Voltaire. And the third piece I got was a sequential page that features one of the few nude scenes of Athena. And I had to pry that away from Steve Bryant. He really didn't want to give it up. Some of the other items I like to shop for at Comic-Con are art books and artist sketchbooks. I managed to pick up the small hardcover book for Travis Charest's Space Girl Volume 1. In terms of artist sketchbooks, I managed to pick up 4 sketchbooks from Adam Hughes, including his 2 new ones, Hissy Fit, and the details are a tad sketchy. The other 2 were his color magazine formats, one from last year, which was actually less of a sketchbook and more just showing his color work. And then he also had one of his early sketchbooks that I missed from about 5 or 6 years ago. He actually had a few copies of that for a little slightly higher price, so I managed to pick that up. Also, right around the corner was Terry Dodson's booth, and I managed to pick up his new sketchbook called Bombshells, Volume 3. I also picked up the last 3 volumes of William Stout's 50 Convention Sketches, Volume 12, 13, and 14. Also arriving late to the convention on Friday was Art Adams' new sketchbook, Number 7. I also managed to pick up the sketches from The Sick and Twisted Mind of Eric Powell, the 2008 Don Sketchbook by Joseph Michael Linzer, and Commission's 2008 Sketchbook by Steve Rood. Comic books. What would be a comic book convention without buying comics? I managed to pick up a small stack of stuff, including the Guns of Shadow Valley Convention Preview Edition by Dave Wachter and the Dal R Studios crew. Also, I managed to pick up Tales Calculated to Drive You Quan. Also, at the Steve Rood booth, he had the Ashcan for Nexus number 101. At the Tilted Kilt Thursday night, we managed to get a freebie from HBO for their upcoming movie or series True Blood, The Great Revelation. They were passing out free comic books and free tickets for free beers with a free glass, so definitely love those promotions at the San Diego Comic-Con. Also, from a trip to Tijuana before the convention started, I managed to pick up a few books in Spanish, including the Amalgam Comics version of Super Soldier, Man of War, and then also 3 editions of Alex Ross's oversized graphic novels for Batman, Superman, and Captain Marvel that came out a number of years ago. However, these were in a smaller magazine format. And finally, the big purchase of the convention for me was Time Lee's Captain America Comics number 66 from April 1948. I went into the convention with a small list of things I was looking for besides the sketchbooks, and one of them was looking at possibly getting one big ticket item. And I considered the things I wanted to get. One of the things I passed on last year was a Captain America shield, and this year I saw at the Sideshow Collectibles booth a triangular Captain America shield, but actually went for the top of my list, one thing I was went in the convention specifically looking for, and that was the Captain America comics number 66. I've pretty much gotten all the Captain America books from the Silver Age up to present, so really the only things left for me to collect are the Golden Age appearances. And I had one book that I had bought 20 years ago for when Time Lees were actually very affordable, so I was very hesitant about going in and buying more Time Lees, knowing the prices that they are now, that I don't know if that was an area of collecting that I wanted to get into. I specifically targeted number 66 because it features a story where they decided to replace Bucky with a female sidekick for Captain America. And finally, the last item I purchased was an autographed photo of Eric Estrada from Chips fame, purely for the cheesiness factor. And there you have it. That's a rundown of the things I picked up at the San Diego Comic-Con for 2008. And this time I'm going to give you a rundown of the cosplay at the San Diego Comic-Con. I saw a number of good DC costumes this year, including a Plastic Man, or to be more correct, a Plastic Woman, as it was a woman dressed up as Plastic Man. Something you don't usually see is the Aquaman villain Black Manta, which was very nicely done. Probably one of the best DC costumes I saw was for Red Arrow. Also gaining in popularity is the Booster Gold cosplay, which pretty much non-existent a few years ago, but we've seen a few pop up over the last few years. And this year, with a new twist, you had 2 female Booster Gold cosplayers. Batman Family cosplay is usually very popular, but even more so this year with the success of The Dark Knight. So you had a lot of Jokers, a lot of Catwomen, a lot of Poison Ivies and Harley Quinns, and a few Batmans too. Also very popular each year is the Wonder Woman cosplay. In terms of Marvel cosplay, you had a number of White Queens, Emma Frost, you had a Marvel Girl, and you also had a nicely done Dark Phoenix, where the cosplayer even had colored contact lenses in. Bringing back a favorite from a few years ago was Psylocke, as done by Lisa Tran. Also, something you don't see too often is cosplay for the New Warriors, and you had one of my favorites, Namorita, cosplayed. Also, from the success of the movies in the last few years, you usually have a lot of Marvel cosplay for Spider-Man, Mary Jane, and the Black Cat. And sure enough, you had definitely a large selection of cosplayers for that. But something you don't usually see is a Spider-Woman cosplay, which we saw from the cosplayer Helen Ure, A-U-R-E. She also cosplayed as Anna Mercury, with, I believe, her husband, Jerry, who went as Nick Fury. Due to the success of the Iron Man movie, you also had a few Iron Man cosplayers out there, with probably one of the best being by Alan Levine, who featured his armor in the Masquerade Saturday night. You had several cosplay gatherings going on throughout the week at the San Diego Comic-Con, including a Marvel gathering at the Marvel booth on Friday, I believe it was. I actually missed that. There was also the yearly Slave Leia gathering at the Gentle Giant booth on Friday. From what I hear from Chris Murin, that this year they tried to pull it off, but it was just too much for the crowds at the time, so they had to break it up and just do a couple Slave Leias at a time, posing with their huge fiberglass Jabba the Hutt that they have in their booth. Another cosplay gathering that they had was the Doctor Who cosplay, with the Torchwood and Doctor Who panels going on Thursday. They thought that would be a good opportunity to do some cosplay for that. Also, people I didn't see, but looking from other people's photos, you had a pretty famous cosplayer in the name of Yaya. She's a Asian lady that's a model that has gotten pretty good success in the cosplay field. From the photo I saw, it looks like she dressed as Elektra. And it looks like you also had some cosplaying done by Scott and Vicky Sebring. I usually see them each year, but missed them this year, but they like to cosplay as the classic 1960s Batman. And that was a quick rundown of a lot of the hall costumes you would see, but on Saturday night they do the Masquerade at the San Diego Comic-Con, and that's usually the big event for cosplayers. They had a pretty good show this year. You had a pretty good Flash Gordon Ming the Merciless group that had a fairly large group that covered many of the characters from the old show. You had the Disney Fairies group run by Brianna Rokes and a bunch of her friends. One of the most adorable costumes was an X-Wing fighter as worn by a little girl named Nicole, designed by her father. Best in Show was a group called We Lost, which features some very, very nice costumes done by a costuming guild. While in the Masquerade photo pit, we also get a number of cosplayers that come by that aren't in the Masquerade, but like to come on stage and get themselves photographed. We had some nice stuff this year, including a very nice Bumblebee Transformer, and also Kitty Contreras, who has been cosplaying as Jedha for the last couple years for Martheus Wade. If you're interested in what some of these costumes look like, I'll try to post some of the images on the comic book page forums for you to look at. Also, if I can plug away a friend, a fellow photographer, Eurobeat, from the cosplay.com site, I definitely recommend go there. He shoots just about everybody in costume that you see at the convention. Does a great job. And if you have any further interest in the world of cosplay and costumes, definitely check out cosplay.com. And there you have it. That's your rundown for the cosplay for the San Diego Comic-Con for 2008.
Hey gang, it's Lynn from Bushytails, also known as Ninja on the forums. I just want to touch base with you about Comic-Con. Dave, Mike, and I had a great time, and we had a great spot. So there was lots of people watching, and we had a lot of our Pod People friends stop by and say hi. And some of them were like John and Bob from Comic Book Page. We had Mr. Phil and Charlito from Indie Spinner Rack, and we had a lot of the geeks stop by from Comic Geek Speak. And we also had Jimmy from Comic News Insider. He stopped by, and we talked comics and name-dropped for a while. And speaking of pod people, the podcast panel was fantastic. It was a lot of fun, and we had a lot of celebrity sightings on the way up there. Kevin Smith walked right in front of us as we were heading down the hall, and we ran into Tad Stones and to Mark Waid and got to talk to them for a little bit, and also met some more pod fanatics in line, which was a lot of fun. I think one of the really cool things that Dave and I got to do was we were walking back from Artist Alley, and this lady asked us, "Hey, would you like to meet the creator of Swamp Thing?" And Dave and I said, "Well, yes, we would." We walked up to the table, and there was Dick Durock, Swampy himself, and Len Wein signing. So we got them to sign a Swamp Thing mask for us, which was really, really cool. I asked Len if I could have my picture made with the two of them, and he says, "Oh, I don't think they'll mind. Come on back." So I went back there, and as I was getting around behind the booth, he leaned over to Dick and said, "Hey, this is my old friend Len. He wants to have our picture made with us." So that was really, really cool. Stopped by the Raw booth a few times and got some comics signed by them. Got some Punisher comics signed by Tim Bradstreet, and got some Alien Pig Farm and the Bad Planet comics signed by him and Thomas Jane, and took them around and got them signed by Bernie Wrightson and Mark Schultz and William Stout as well, which is really, really cool. Also got a great Harley Quinn sketch by Bruce Timm. And when I stopped by Stan Sakai's booth and asked him to sign my Usagi Yojimbo book, he said, "Oh, I love this book. This is great. Yeah, no problem." And before I knew it, I had a full-page sketch inside there. So that was pretty wild. So I went ahead and bought a sketchbook from him and picked up a few other sketchbooks from Adam Hughes and Bernie Wrightson and Ruben Martinez and Sean Galloway. Ruben and Sean's were both hardback books, and they did sketches inside of theirs, which is really, really, really cool. Steve Bryant hooked me up with one of his sketchbooks, and our neighbors, the Action Philosopher guys, hooked me up with some of their comics. Had an old friend of ours, Scott Clark, signing at our table. We did a special limited edition Bushytails print with Scott. So it was kind of fun to hang out with him. I haven't seen him since the old Star Gods days, before he and Dave both moved to the other side of the country. I think the coolest thing that happened all weekend was that I got to fly from San Diego to Dallas with Chewbacca. That's right, they had an Ewok and a Wookiee on the same flight. Got to talk to Peter Mayhew and his wife Angie for about an hour or so while we were waiting for our flight. And Greg Oden, basketball player that was signed at the con, was sitting across from us as well. Angie was nice enough to hand out some Chewbacca trading cards to me and all the other kids that were sitting around there. And Peter was nice enough to sign one for me. So that was really, really cool. The traffic was nuts and the crowds were insane, but you know, we survived another San Diego Comic-Con and had a great time doing it. Hope you did too. I'll be at the Super Show next. And after that, I guess the next con I won't have until after the first of the year, which is Phoenix, the Cactus Con. So I hope you guys can make it there. Until then, I guess I'll just see you guys on the boards. This is Ninja. Talk to you later. Bye. Wow. I just realized I said really, really cool a lot. Oh, well. Hanging out with 150,000 of my closest friends was really, really cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.